Good day. This is Kim Harden, and I'm reading the Danville Commercial News for you today on July 7th, 2026, and it's Tuesday. I like to start with the weather, give you a little update on what's happening. Mostly sunny today, high of 86, low of 62, and tomorrow a little bit more of the same, 88 and 70. Looks like a chance of showers comes in on Thursday and Friday. The headline story is Missing Danville Woman is Located by Christy Jankowski. A woman missing for 10 days has been located and is safe. This is like out of the ordinary, unexpected, Charlotte Felton said about her sister Angela Felton's disappearance. This is not right. That's all I can say. It's just not right. Until Monday, Felton had not been in contact with her family since June 25th. The Danville police had asked for the public's help in locating 49-year-old Angela Felton on Friday, July 3rd. Charlotte Felton said the police were incredibly helpful in bringing Angela home. Charlotte Felton also requested help through social media, posting in the Danville Scanner unrated Facebook page on Saturday, July 4th, where many commented on the post, hoping Angela would be found. Charlotte says her sister Angela is not the type to stop being social, which is why her 10-day disappearance frightened her. She's very social, you know. That's just her. She tends to be on her Facebook, you know, that she hasn't been on that for quite some time, Felton said. She loved her grandkids, which they don't live here, but she stayed off FaceTiming. She stayed calling. She stayed in people's inboxes, letting them know, hey, either she's asking for something or she's trying to, you know, just chat. You know, that's just her. Yeah, that's just her. She'll call you from anybody else's number if she could. That's just her. Charlotte describes her sister Angela as bubbly and chatty and says it was odd that she had yet to be found with the holiday. She loved hanging around, being with her family, especially around the holidays, Felton said, so this is unusual for her not to be with us for the 4th of July. Charlotte Felton added the Oak Street Apartments was one of the areas Felton said they would check. That is her go-to place, Charlotte said about her sister. She hung out with the guys there, over there, and it was a few of them, and that's where she goes, or she would go on to Walnut Street. Charlotte adds that Angela was at the Pavilion in Champaign recently, but she said she has been here in Danville ever since, Charlotte said. She would go in, and she will check in at the Pavilion, and then she'll come here because she doesn't have her own place. She added that she would stay with their mom, hang out on Oak Street, and eventually return to the Pavilion. However, Charlotte says she had not been there since mid-June. Charlotte says she and her sister would frequently spend time together, plan trips, go out to eat, and more. I am the forefront of finding Angie, my little sister, and I just want the Lord to bring her home. Let us hug her and see her again, Charlotte Felton says, and you know, continue this sisterly and family thing. I just want her to come home. This is not her. This is strange. Charlotte did not give up hope in finding her sister. People have inboxed and said, hey, check this place. Yeah, they saw her in Champaign a week ago. I've seen her at the blood bank because she would go and she would donate at the blood bank in Champaign. Her sister stresses her disappearance was odd, and she is happy she is home. This has never happened, she said about Angela. Everybody tends to you when you want that quiet time but don't want to be bothered. But my sister is not that. She's always had a phone or on Facebook. Three beautiful pictures of fireworks filling the sky. Fireworks of all sizes and types were the theme this weekend as the United States of America celebrated its 250th birthday. Festivities got started on Thursday night with a fireworks program following the Danville Dance Game with the Champion City Half Tracks at Danville Stadium. Over the holiday weekend, fireworks, both professional and amateur, could be heard from the early evening hours until late into the night. News to know if you have to use the Cannon Building this week. Vermilion County Chairman Stephen Miller announced on Sunday that the Joseph G. Cannon Building will have adjusted hours this week. According to the release from the county, the changes are because of excessive heat and humidity, along with the lack of air conditioning in the building while the unit is being repaired. The new hours this week, Monday, July 6th to Friday, July 10th, will be 8 a.m. to 10 a.m. There was a fiery semi-accident on I-74 on Sunday if you were headed eastbound. Eastbound traffic from Oakwood on I-74 was diverted on Sunday afternoon following a fiery semi-crash. The eastbound lanes of I-74 was diverted around 2 o'clock p.m. at the Oakwood exit 206 to U.S. Route 150. Illinois State Troopers were on scene following an accident between two semi-trucks. Only minor injuries were reported by ISP. Online, many people shared images and videos of the crash, where it appears the semis are engulfed in flames. Brian Burns sent a couple of photos of the crash. He called it a crazy fire that ruined someone's holiday weekend. Burns runs the 217 Problems page on Facebook. Troopers asked people on Sunday afternoon to avoid the area, but all lanes were clear by the evening. Multiple fire departments responded to the incident. And in additional traffic news, there is a new traffic pattern that will impact State Route 63. The Indiana Department of Transportation announced a traffic pattern change on State Route 63 in Vermilion County. According to the release from NDOT, beginning on or after Wednesday, July 8th, contractors will implement a new traffic pattern on State Route 63 between US 36 and State Route 71 slash County Road 150 North as part of the ongoing construction between Montezuma and Newport, Indiana. During this phase of construction, traffic will shift from the northbound lanes and utilize the southbound lanes in both directions. The purpose of the traffic shift is to allow crews to resurface the northbound lanes. The entire project is anticipated to be complete by the end of 2026, but is weather dependent and subject to change. NDOT encourages drivers to use caution and avoid distracted driving in and around the work zones. Motorists in West Central Indiana can monitor road closures, road conditions, and traffic alerts anytime via facebook.com/NDOTWestCentralX at NDOT underscore West Central traffic wise 511IN.org or the mobile app, iTunes App Store, and the Google Play Store for Android. Turning to state news, Naomi Taxay of the Metal, Illinois News Bureau writes, "Illinois schools grapple with AI, cyberbullying, and deepfakes." In Chicago, earlier this year, administrators at Lake Zurich High School confronted a growing challenge facing schools nationwide: students using artificial intelligence to create sexually explicit images of their classmates. After reporting the matter to police, the district launched a series of student and family education efforts focused on online safety and responsible technology use. The incident illustrates the kind of situations Illinois lawmakers may have had in mind when they passed a bill last year requiring schools to address AI-generated content in their bullying prevention policies. Beginning July 1st, the state's definition of cyberbullying was expanded to include AI-generated digital replicas, forcing districts across Illinois to update policies and procedures. Also, by July 1st, the Illinois State Board of Education was required to develop statewide guidance on artificial intelligence in schools. The guidance is expected to address AI-generated false representations of individuals to help districts update their policies ahead of the 2026-27 school year. ISBE Press Secretary Lindsay Record said that while the agency is still developing guidance, it remains the case that local policies, procedures, and responses to specific incidents are determined at the district and the school level. In Lake Zurich, for the coming school year, officials expect to build on the guidance provided following the earlier incident. The district anticipates continued integration of explicit teaching opportunities for all students regarding safe, responsible technology usage in alignment with core district values. Jean Malik, Executive Director of Communications for Lake Zurich Community Unity School District 95, told Medill, Illinois News Bureau in an email. Additionally, the district anticipates continued information and resource sharing with families on how to best support safe technology usage. Even though schools already have policies to address bullying, the new law provides important clarification by naming unauthorized AI-generated digital replicas as a newer form of harm, said Scott Rowe, superintendent of Township High School District 214. The message is clear, Rowe said. AI does not remove responsibility. The law, he said, will give districts clearer language for policies, student expectations, and family conversations. The school-focused legislation doesn't change Illinois' criminal statutes governing AI-generated sexual imagery. Under state law, AI-generated sexual images that appear to depict minors may be prosecuted under child pornography and related obscenity statutes, depending on the circumstances. Creating, possessing, or distributing such images can result in felony charges. Also in state news, Benton resigns, withdraws name from ballot amid ethics investigation. Brendan Moore writes from Springfield in the Capital News, Illinois. Representative Harry Benton resigned from the Illinois House on Friday in the wake of a legislative inspector general investigation that has still not been made public. Nevertheless, House Speaker Emanuel Chris Welch, who received the report earlier this week, said it revealed clear patterns of conduct by Benton that were outrageous, unethical, and unbecoming of a member of Illinois House of Representatives. Welch on Wednesday called on Benton to resign or face expulsion by his colleagues. In a letter addressed to Welch and his House colleagues, the Plainville Democrat said in his resignation that it was effective at 4:59 p.m. Friday and that he also intends to withdraw his name as the Democratic nominee of the 97th House District in the upcoming election. This matter has placed tremendous strain on my family since it began in late February, Benton wrote. As we move forward into the next chapter of our lives, I respectfully ask that our privacy be honored. Welch, in a statement, confirmed receipt of Benton's letter. The speaker on Wednesday promised to initiate expulsion proceedings against the two-term Southwest suburban incumbent if he didn't leave on his own. I am grateful to those who came forward and trusted our office to listen, support them, and ensure their concerns were handled appropriately, Welch said. A long, secretive process. Welch kicked Benton out of the Democratic caucus and stripped him of his committee assignments with no public explanation in late February. Capital News Illinois later confirmed that unspecified allegations of sexual harassment were made against Benton and that the matter had been referred to the legislative inspector general. LIG Mike McCuskey told Capital News Illinois earlier this week that he delivered his findings to Welch's office on Wednesday. Under the LIG process, Welch and Benton now have 20 days to respond in writing. Welch's response would include details of any corrective or disciplinary action imposed. If McCuskey determines the action to be appropriate and adequate, he must file a report with the Legislative Ethics Commission within 30 days, detailing why he isn't filing a complaint. The case would then be closed. With Benton's resignation, it remains unclear if McCuskey's report detailing the lawmaker's conduct will ever become public. Only the Legislative Ethics Commission, an 8-member board comprised of an equal number of Democrats and Republicans from both legislative chambers, can make it so. And that's only done in cases resulting in at least 3-day suspension, termination, or as part of a public record of a disciplinary hearing held by the LEC. It's unclear if Benton's case falls under any of these categories. The last time a report was made public was 2020. The Benton situation has been a mystery, with his colleagues, legislative staff, and lobbyists in the Capitol, as well as his constituents back home, left largely in the dark. Welch told reporters when pressed in April and again in his statement on Wednesday that he refrained from commenting on the allegations to protect the privacy of those who came forward, preserve the integrity of the investigation, respect due process, and comply with the guidance and legal requirements established in our ethics procedures. Moving on to sports now, Marvin Holman writes that the Dans take 2 out of 3. After a tough start to the 4th of July weekend on Thursday, the Danville Dans rebounded with two wins on the road. The Dans started the weekend with an 11-7 loss to the Champion City Halftracks at Danville Stadium. The Halftracks were able to take advantage of some errors to keep building on the lead, so when the Dans made a late run, it was a big mountain to climb. "Errors killed us in the game," Dans head coach Cam Gross said. "We hit okay, but they out-hit us. We had won 8 of our last 9, but I am not going to kill these guys for losing a game. We played bad defense, and we paid for it, plain and simple." The guys stayed in and still stayed late. Scoring 2 runs in the bottom of the 9th showed how much they didn't want to give up, and even down 6, it was still a huge credit to those guys, and I appreciate them fighting back, and we hope we can come back from that. The game was also the final start for Bismarck Henning Rossville Alvin product, Caden Kalaminick. He pitched 4 innings with 5 strikeouts. "It was a rough start, and I didn't get ahead in the counts like I usually do," Kalaminick said. "The command on my fastball wasn't good, and it really hurt me. I got down for every battle, but to get out with 2 runs didn't hurt us, and we were fine at this time." Kalaminick will now take some time off before going back to Kankakee Community College. "It's been really fun. I love the fans, the coaches, and the teammates," Kalaminick said. "I think this was probably my worst outing this summer, but looking back, it wasn't that bad. I met a lot of new people, and I was able to play in my hometown. I got the rest to rest my arm, and I go back to Kankakee in August." "We are going to miss him. He's a great pitcher," Gross said. "He's given us a whole lot of length and starts, and he is going to be missed." After Kalaminick, Sam MacArthur came in and pitched 2 innings, Austin Penry pitched 2 innings, and Salt Fork product Pedro Rangel, the 4th, pitched the 9th. Mason McReynolds had 3 hits and 3 RBIs for the Dans. Carson Brady had 2 RBIs. Will Burke and Nick Palmy each had 1 RBI, and Jacob May had 2 hits. After the fireworks that came after Thursday's game, the Dans decided to put on some more fireworks on Friday. J.J. Basinger had 3 hits with 2 home runs and 4 RBIs as the Dans beat the Lafayette Aviators 18-10. Burke had 4 hits with 3 doubles and 2 RBIs for Danville, while Cannon Vandiver had 2 RBIs. May Palmy and Brady each had 3 hits and an RBI. Chase Bays had 2 hits and an RBI. And McReynolds, Nicholas Seedham, and Amir Streeter each had 1 RBI. Hayden Trier went to 2-0 for the season, going 5 innings with 4 strikeouts. Newcomer Dominic Cristenzio pitched the 6th, and James Duckworth pitched the last 3 innings for the save. The Dans wrapped up the weekend on Saturday with a trip to Huntington, Indiana to play the DuBois County Bombers. The Dans would go on to beat the Bombers 3-1 and are now 21-12 overall and 6-2 in the second half of the season. Today, 3 Dans, Burke, MacArthur, and Drake Hoffa, will be part of the Eastern Conference team in the Prospect League All-Star Game at Lafayette, Indiana. Danville will return to action on Thursday when they will play against the Springfield Lucky Horseshoes on the road. They will travel to play the O'Fallon Hoots on Friday and the Burlington Bees on Saturday before finally coming back to Danville Stadium on Sunday to play the Kokomo Creek Chubs at 4:30 p.m. I hope to make it to a Danville Dans game this year. And definitely going to a Cubs game here pretty soon. Cubs going through some ups and downs. Noah Trister, AP baseball writer, writes, "The Chicago Cubs battered San Diego to the tune of a 23-3 score that would have seemed more appropriate for an old Bears-Chargers matchup. Then, in their very next game, they lost to St. Louis 17-1. The Cubs have been a tough team to figure out this season. By May 9th, they had already had 2 separate 10-game winning streaks and were 15 games over 500. Then, a week later, they began a 10-game losing streak. Chicago is now 10 games over 500, but trails the Milwaukee Brewers by 6 atop the NL Central. On Wednesday, Dansby Swanson hit 3 home runs with 8 RBIs as the Cubs produced their most runs at home since 1977. San Diego catcher Rodolfo Duran pitched the final 2 innings, allowing 8 runs. After a day off, off, Chicago looked like a completely different team Friday when David Peterson allowed 10 earned runs in 3 2/3 innings against the Cardinals. Perhaps it was simply a case of Chicago facing two opponents heading in different directions. The blowout loss Wednesday was part of an 8-game losing streak for the Padres. Meanwhile, the Cardinals took 2 of 3 at Wrigley Field and have won 5 of their last 7 overall. The Cubs have been one of baseball's better offensive teams despite a quiet season from new addition Alex Bregman. Pete Crow Armstrong has 19 homers, 23 steals, and a 910 OPS. Trivia time. Crow Armstrong is tied for the major league in homers plus stolen bases with 42. Which player is he tied with, and who led the majors in that stat last year? I'll give you the answer. Bobby Witt Jr. has 12 home runs and 30 steals. Last year's leader was Juan Soto with 43 homers and 38 steals. Late dramatics. The Cubs led the majors with 10 walk-off victories this season, and the crosstown White Sox are second with 7. But two of the biggest walk-off wins this week came against Chicago. Brian Rocchio hit a 2-run homer in the bottom of the ninth to give Cleveland a 6-5 victory over the White Sox on Thursday night. Then Khalil Watson hit a game-winning RBI single the following night in the 10th for a 4-3 triumph. The first-place White Sox have been one of the game's biggest stories of the year, but even after Chicago took the last 2 games of the 4-game set, Cleveland is only a game behind in the AL Central. Performance of the week. Yuri Perez pitched 7 perfect innings, then was pulled by Miami manager Clayton McCullough on Sunday. The move nearly blew up in McCullough's face, but the Marlins held on to beat the Athletics 9-8 after almost squandering an 8-0 lead. Part of McCullough's explanation was that he was thinking long-term with the Marlins, hoping to play beyond the regular season, and it probably is time for the rest of baseball to take Miami seriously as a playoff contender. The Marlins are percentage points behind St. Louis for the 3rd wild card, and they have the 2nd-best run differential in the NL East. Perez has allowed 2 runs in 17 innings since returning from a leg injury last month. Comeback of the week. The Houston Astros rallied from a 7-2 deficit to beat Tampa Bay Rays 10-8 on Saturday. Yordan Alvarez hit a 2-run homer in the bottom of the ninth to win it. That snapped a 9-game winning streak by the Rays, who now lead the New York Yankees by 4 atop AL East. Houston is 45-47, but just 2.5 games out of first place in the AL West and 1 game out of a wild card. And I'm sure there's some NASCAR fans out there, so let me read Briscoe Wins Big in Chicagoland by Jay Cohen of the AP. In Joliet, Chase Briscoe was on an off-season bonding trip to the United Kingdom with crew chief James Small when the NASCAR driver discovered chocolate buttons, a popular British treat. He bought some online after he returned to the U.S., but he said it wasn't the same. Small purchased some on a return trip to the U.K., but he promised to share if Briscoe won on the crew chief's birthday. That made Sunday night's victory pretty sweet. Briscoe held off Christopher Bell in NASCAR's return to Chicagoland Speedway, racing to his first Cup Series win of the season, and Small delivered the chocolates to Briscoe moments after it was over. They were pretty dang good, Briscoe said. Briscoe was followed closely by Bell in the final laps on the 1.5-mile oval about 50 miles southwest of downtown Chicago, but Bell was unable to run down his Joe Gibbs racing teammate. The 31-year-old Briscoe, an Indiana native, celebrated his 6th career win with a burnout before standing on his car and waving to the sellout crowd. "This has been a place that I've always loved coming back to when we used to, and I've missed it," Briscoe said. "It's always been one of my top 5 tracks." It was Bell's 4th runner-up finish this season. He was wearing a splint on his arm, and he continues his recovery after breaking his left wrist in a crash at Michigan on June 7th. "I think he's handled that really well, as well as you can handle it, team owner Joe Gibbs said. "He's got a burning desire to stay in there and win. I think he had a real good car tonight, too." Denny Hamlin, who started on the pole, was third. William Byron, who won two stages while leading a race-high 94 laps, and Alex Bowman rounded out the top five. "I thought I was in control early on, even though I wasn't leading," Hamlin said. "I felt in control and probably got a little lazy on some restarts and things like that, just taking for granted that I'll just go up there and get it." NASCAR ran 19 cup races in Joliet before pulling out after the 2019 season. It tried to rebuild interest in the event in a crowded sports market, but the race struggled with attendance. After racing on a street course in downtown Chicago each previous 3 years, NASCAR decided to go back to Chicagoland, eager to see how the next-gen cars would do on the rough and bumpy asphalt at the facility. Rain on Friday and Saturday caused some parking issues, but the racing was compelling. Led by Briscoe, Bell, and Hamlin, Toyota accounted for 7 of the top 10 cars for the first time in Cup race history, continuing a strong season for the manufacturing. "Yeah, Toyotas are fast," Bell said. Driving a Space Jam-themed car in honor of the 30th anniversary of the Looney Tunes movie, Bubba Wallace was 6th in his number 23 Toyota Camry. Wallace is part of the 23XI racing team that is co-owned by Michael Jordan, one of the stars of the 1996 movie. Ryan Blaney was 7th in his 7th consecutive top 10 finish. Ty Gibbs, Corey Heim, and Riley Herbst completed the top 10. Tyler Reddick's championship hopes were damaged by the oil leak with about 32 laps left in Stage 2. There was a long caution while Reddick's 23XI racing crew worked on his number 45 Toyota in the garage replacing the radiator because of a hole. Reddick, who won the first three races of the season, finished 36th. He trails Hamlin by 44 points at the top of the Cup standings after he was down by 1 going into the weekend. Kyle Larson also had a rough day after qualifying 2nd behind Hamlin. He was in 3rd place when he spun out of Turn 4 on lap 93. He drove his number 5 Hendrix Motorsports Chevrolet into the wet infield grass and had to be pulled out of the mud. Larson finished 34th and extending his winless drought to 43 races. He finished 2nd in each of the previous 2 Cups races at Chicagoland. Updating the in-season challenge. Briscoe, Bell, Hamlin, and Blaney were among the winners in the 2nd round of NASCAR's in-season challenge. Byron, Chase Elliott, Todd Gilliam, and Alex Bowman also moved on. The winner of the 5-race bracket-style tournament receives $1 million. Briscoe eliminated Ty Gibbs, who won the inaugural competition last year. Byron defeated Larson, his teammate, with Hendrick Motorsports. Up next, the Cup Series is at Echo Park Speedway in Hampton, Georgia next weekend. Reddick won the February stop at the track. Turning back to local and community briefs, first off, there's a big picture of an adorable Giovanni Jeremiah Young, who was born at 2:01 on Saturday, July 4th, at 8 pounds and 20 and 3/4 inches long at OSF Healthcare Sacred Heart Mary Medical Center in Danville. He's wearing a onesie that says, "My first 4th of July." So cute. Judge Campbell will honor America, reading the Declaration of Independence at 7 o'clock Eastern Time, Wednesday, July 8th, on the steps of Fountain County Courthouse. Campbell's appearance in part of the Fountain County 200th celebration and America's 250th celebration. The public is invited and encouraged to attend for this historical occasion. For more information, you can reach out to Amy Thompson at 765-585-5945. Also, Illinois Extension and OSF are offering diabetes support and have joined together for a monthly diabetes support group designed for individuals living with diabetes and for their caregivers. These sessions will be held on the 2nd Tuesday of every month from 10 to 11 at the Danville Public Library, 319 Vermilion Street, Danville. The next session is set for July 7th, and the final session will be December 8th. Each session will include a short educational component and open discussion where participants may share their experiences, discuss their successes and challenges, and learn from one another. Topics are not preset and will be guided on participants' interests and needs. Participants will receive a Smart Meals kit from OSF. To learn more or to register, go to Visit go.illinois.edu/diabetesdpl. If you need reasonable accommodation to participate or wish to register over the phone, contact Rachel Mannon at 217-333-7672. This is Kim Harden, finishing up the Danville Commercial News for Tuesday, July the 7th. It's been my privilege to read for you. Have a great day.